Hi everyone, this is Dr. Cheryl Selman and welcome to What Women Must Know. Thank you for joining me once again for an opportunity to have an in-depth conversation that really will profoundly impact your life. And that's what really the show is all about. It's giving you the kind of information that will give you greater insight, will empower you so you can make those informed decisions necessary for your health and the health of your family, friends, colleagues. This is information we all must have if we really want to live a healthy, vital life. So once again, this is wonderful because I have a guest today that will really open your eyes and make you aware of what's going on around us that very few people really have an awareness of. And what I'm talking about today is our wireless world. Now, you may have heard me talk about this in the past because this is a topic that I am really passionate about, trying to educate people about just to what extent our wireless world is impacting our health, the health of our children, and what is coming down the pike in terms of even greater exposure to this wireless frequency and radiation. So today, my guest is Deborah Kopald, and Deborah has really been dedicated to educating everyone in the public, officials, just everyone about what's going on. We're going to be talking about what you must know about the wireless health hazards we're exposed to. And I want to just share a little bit about Deborah. She's an environmental consultant and has developed and overseen the passage of legislative initiatives to protect the public from cell phone radiation and wireless technologies. She advises government officials, schools, doctors, and lawyers on telecommunication policies, Wi-Fi technology, and the environmental and health risks these technologies pose to citizens. Deborah is a review editor at the journal Frontiers in Public Health and holds a bachelor's degree from Harvard and an MBA from MIT's Sloan School of Management. She's published in reviews on environmental health and the Consumer Law and Policy blog. In 2013, she organized and moderated the Conference on Corporate Interference with Science and Health, which covered fracking, GMOs, and wireless health hazards. So, if anyone really understands the depth of the problem, it's my guest today, Deborah Kopald. So, Deborah, welcome to the show.
Thanks for having me, Cheryl.
It's such a pleasure. And, we talked before the show, and this is a topic that I know you are really extremely passionate about and concerned about, rightly so. So, but before we get into some of the politics that's happening and the latest science, I just really want to ask you, what got you interested and involved in this, and in this issue?
Yeah, it's interesting. The late 90s, I was involved with cell tower sighting, and my second job out of college, I was commuting from my hometown, and after work one day, I stopped by a town board meeting just on a whim, just to see what this local government stuff was all about, and they were talking about putting a cell tower next to a school. So I made a comment during public comment. I said, this is a very serious issue. I've read some things. I've seen some literature that says that you shouldn't have these kinds of towers close to, where people live and work, certainly not a kid's school. And then I went to another meeting. I complained again, and the town supervisor made me his telecommunications advisor. So at that point, what I did is I researched probably 40 or 50 town zoning ordinances from around the country that were regulating these towers. Now, this was 1997, and the Telecommunications Act had just been passed in 96, and cell towers had started to sprout up shortly before that, sort of en masse. And so at that point, I did all the research. I gave a presentation to the town on the science, on the legal aspects, and eventually got my zoning ordinance passed 5-0 in 1998 to regulate the cell towers in my town. And what I found at that point was interesting because one of the ordinances I had looked at was in Wayland, Massachusetts, where The founder of Bose Radio is from there, and he had made sure that all of the cell towers were in the industrial section of town, far away from the residences, and he was knowledgeable about the effects of radio frequency radiation, having worked in radio his whole life. So you had a few towns that, you know, proactively regulated these, that they wouldn't, you know, show up next to a school or show up next to your bedroom window and if you were in an apartment building, which has since happened in many cities, like New York. So that's how I kind of cut my teeth with this issue in the late 90s. I noticed sort of subsequent to that point, whether I would move someplace else or travel someplace else, that they were putting cell towers in inappropriate locations. When I was at MIT, they had one on a candy factory next to the student dorms, and it was concealed. It was colored the same color as the sort of upper levels of the candy factory, so you would miss it if you didn't know what you were looking for. And so, you know, I noticed that, you know, the more urban areas you were in, the less regulation there was, the less concern or knowledge about people that this was an issue. And so somewhere in the mid to late 2000s, I started asking questions about Wi-Fi. I was aware that it used radio frequency, microwave radiation, the way cell towers emit microwave radiation, but I didn't know exactly the extent of it. So I started asking questions at a conference. Then I looked at FCC Bulletin OET 65 and looked at the physics formula for radiation propagation from an antenna. And what you can see, both looking at the physics and if you get a radio frequency meter to measure the microwave radiation coming off of these things, is that Wi-Fi, you know, it's how close you are to the transmitter more so than total power output. So effectively, if you're in a Wi-Fi environment, you can be exposing yourself to as much or more radiation than you would get from being too close to a cell tower. Now, it depends exactly on the configuration of the cell tower and the configuration of your Wi-Fi. Certainly, residential Wi-Fi is a little weaker than industrial-strength Wi-Fi that we're seeing in schools, which is so serious. But certainly, I would say if, you know, you have the Wi-Fi transmitter fairly far from your bedroom in your house, you're still exposed to radiation that you might get within 1,000 feet of a cell tower. And the guidance going back to when cell towers were put up was to stay at least 1,500 feet away from a cell tower. And, of course, the radiation in your house would be higher than that with everyone connected on their devices. You see all these commercials on TV where they're encouraging people to have multiple devices connected. I saw one the other day where it showed some men wanted to watch football and the women were watching it on the main screen TV, so they took their little devices and went into the shed to watch together, but, you know, really encouraging people to have everything connected, and that's not a good idea because you're boosting up levels of radiation in your house that are in the level of severe to extreme concern per the Building Biology Institute guidelines, which were, by the way, set on the basis of science prior to the rollout of all these technologies. So that's really, you know, where I saw that there was a problem, that where you first had sort of a geographical problem of people living too close to cell towers, perhaps 10% or more developing symptoms of microwave sensitization around them, something that you could fix either by moving, right, your geographical problem, or shielding your house. To having Wi-Fi ubiquitous indoors took a geographical problem and made it into a public health problem. And this is understood in other places. It's understood if you go over the border to Toronto College Women's Hospital, if you come in with any symptoms at all, before they attempt to diagnose you, before they put you on drugs, the primary care physicians are trained to look for this as a potential cause, and they have their patients eliminate sources of microwave radiation in their house, which would include your cordless phone, your Wi-Fi, if you have a smart meter as well, to talk to the utility about swapping it out for a non-wireless meter, and to sort of limit, reduce cell phone use. So, you know, it's a totally different mindset in other places. In Russia, the Non-Ionizing Radiation Protection Commission warns people about this. They have much better guidance there where children are told not to use a cell phone before age 18. I think you can't sell them to a child technically before they're 18. In Argentina, there's a bill to ban Wi-Fi in major public places, including schools, hospitals, and cultural institutions, which I think might include government buildings. And so, you know, in Germany and Austria, Frankfurt, Germany, Salzburg, Austria, they did not install Wi-Fi in schools. The German Office of Radiation Protection recommended to everyone that they not install it. But, of course, it wasn't a mandate, and many people, I'm sure, did. But, you know, there's more knowledge and awareness in some of these other places. The doctors group in Bamberg, Germany, wrote a letter in 2005 saying that there was They had, you know, a significant cohort of patients who were reacting to their cordless phones, to Wi-Fi, to being too close to a cell tower, and that the government had to take action to stop rolling out more transmitters and putting out more of this stuff. But, of course, you know, you go back to the time when I was looking at the cell tower siting issue. And, by the way, at that point, the California Public Utilities Commission had recommended that people not put a tower near schools or near hospitals, and it was then interpreted from people doing local zoning ordinances, okay, well, if we don't want to have it near, you know, if sensitive populations are in schools and hospitals, children and elderly and people with cancer, et cetera, live in residences, so our zoning ordinances need to protect residences. And when you look at places like Hempstead, New York, or Palm Beach County, they have a zoning code that says you have to keep the tower 1,500 feet away from school, residence, synagogue, church, et cetera. Which is, you know, the 1,500 was set on the basis at which the radiation leveled off from a cell tower. But indeed, with some of the newer frequencies, it probably needs to be further than that. And the epidemiology studies that were done since then really only looked at radiuses of 1,500, not further from that. And scientists were saying you really need to be much farther than 1,500 feet away from them to be really proactive. You go to a city like New York where there's absolutely no regulations whatsoever. It is the most unregulated environment, I think, anywhere. You have them on, you know, outside of people's bedroom windows in Brooklyn on buildings. They're on buildings that are too low in places in Manhattan. You know, there's a movie, you can see it on YouTube now, it's Full Signal. If you go to www.fullsignalmovie.com, you can buy it or you can look for it on YouTube, which chronicles what happened in all these places where these towers, you know, were stuck on top of buildings. And so people, what's happened with people is they think because something is there that it's and it's normalized, someone must have decided it's safe. If you go back to the mid-90s when the California Public Utilities Commission said to keep the cell towers away, and then you have people putting them on buildings, right, the message wasn't trickling through. I've spoken to people in schools in California who complain about, you know, that they've had serious problems in school cancer clusters, et cetera, with cell towers there. And I said, did you know about the CPUC guidance? And they say, no, what's that? So the message never really got out there, and people aren't getting, you know, aren't getting proper information from the government about this. 60 Minutes was going to do an expose on cell towers a number of years ago, in like 2001 or thereabouts, and it got scrapped because, you know, the advertising dollars chasing this are like tobacco in the 1950s. And in fact, the wireless industry provides more revenue to the U.S. Treasury than any other industry other than oil and gas. So you really have to sort of follow the money on this one. But it doesn't obviate the fact that this is such a serious public health problem and that people don't believe it. Sometimes when I say to people, okay, you shouldn't have Wi-Fi, at least if you have it in your house, shut it off at night or shut it off when you're not using it. Really, you shouldn't have it at all, and you should keep your house hardwired. But a few people I've talked to, they kept the Wi-Fi transmitter under their bed or their kid's bed, and they come back and they say, okay, I moved it a few feet away. I said, no, you don't get it. It's not a question of a few feet. It really needs to be off indoors. And people don't have this intuitive understanding of radiation physics, which is the radiation drops with the square of distance. I've had doctors that I've talked to say, oh, yeah, I know cell towers are a problem. And then I said, do you understand how Wi-Fi compares to a cell tower? And they don't. They either haven't been curious enough to ask the question, were asleep at the switch in physics class, combination thereof. So, you know, you really, and I think I really urge people to get a meter to measure this radiation so you can see the difference between having Wi-Fi on and off. I've had people who should know better, right, in positions of power in institutions say things like, well, I failed to see the difference as to, you know, how it can be that much different if we have Wi-Fi or we don't have Wi-Fi because you can see passive networks from other places in a city. Well, in fact, your smartphone or someone's smartphone can see passive networks, but the networks connect the information at a fraction lower than what people are being exposed to with, you know, being close to a Wi-Fi transmitter. So just because your phone can see somebody's network down the street, it's orders of magnitude less radiation than having an active Wi-Fi transmitter on in the premises. And this is a concept that people are slow to get, perhaps don't want to get because they're used to now habituated to having Wi-Fi. I saw an article this morning that Jeff Bezos, the head of Amazon, has an Amazon.
I saw that article, yeah.
Oh, yeah, he has one in his
bathroom. Wanting to have one and having it echoes in every room?
Yeah, he wants. He says he has to have it in his bathroom because, you know, if he wants to order something when he's in the bathroom, he needs to have the signal in there.
So you, while we're talking about this, the Wi-Fi, the level of intrusion of Wi-Fi in our homes, and how we have just accelerated that exposure by all our devices. Why don't you just elaborate a little bit on that Bezos article so people understand what, until recently I didn't know what an Echo was anyway. So maybe we can just elaborate on that and define that for people.
Sure. There's, you know, a series of devices that people are now putting in their homes, consumer devices that run on a Wi-Fi system. Those can be, some people now have their lights are Wi-Fi'd, so instead of flicking a switch, you call into your Wi-Fi system and give it a command, whether verbal or through a computer, to tell it to dim the lights or shut them off or what have you. And we're doing that with other consumer devices. This Amazon Echo, as I understand it, is like this wireless device where you can ask it questions. If you call it a name as if it's a servant, it's called Alexa. You say, Alexa, where do I turn to get on the nearest I-95 highway or something like that, or where is the nearest store where I can buy, German cooking supplies or, you know, something along those lines. And so Jeff Bezos is a techie, and he says, I want to have this, you know, access to this in my bathroom. I could only have it in my living room, in my dining room, my bedroom. So he's, you know, Wi-Fi'd his house more extensively to have be able to be sitting on the toilet and be like, you know, where can I get whatever.
But Deborah, the story is even bigger than that because he created it. Amazon created it. Mm. So he is promoting it and wants to have these Wi-Fi units. And he wants everyone to have these Wi-Fi units in their homes, in every room in their home, in their car. I mean, we are talking about rolling out wireless technology, emitting the radiation that will be like a little cell phone tower giving and receiving information based on this microwave radiation in every single room in your home. That's his goal.
Right. Well, it's already, I think, at that point. You know, there was an interesting quote by, I'll read the quote and see if you can guess who said it. The average American home is now rigged like a maximum security prison with surveillance in every room, recording everything you say and do. Be very, very careful with smart technology. Do not trust it. The truth is starting to emerge. That was Vladimir Putin who said that to a a group of Canadians and Americans who were touring the Kremlin. But he's not wrong. So it's already happened. And there was a case of a crime in Bentonville, Arkansas, or an alleged crime where somebody was found dead in a bathtub in somebody's house. And the police came and first they subpoenaed Amazon for the information from the guy's Amazon Echo, which they appear to Amazon didn't provide the information directly from the server, but they gave the passwords. They were able to access the information that way. But the guy's house was completely rigged with wireless. He had his lights on a wireless system. He had a wireless weather monitoring system outside. He had numerous tablets, a Wii system, where, you know, Xbox, where you use, which runs on a Wi-Fi system. He had a wireless smart meter, which recorded when, you know, they were arguing that a lot of water was used in the bathtub between 1 and 3 a.m. when they think the person died, and that it was used to cover up the crime and drown him in the bathtub, or, you know, submerge him in the bathtub after he was killed or strangled. But so he had all of this wireless equipment, and as well as he had an alarm system as well. I mean, it was a huge list of things. And so this is already happening. Some people are already living like this. Chelsea Clinton lives in a quote-unquote smart home in this $10 million house that she lives in mid to lower Manhattan. And so people are living like this. I think if you measured the radiation in Chelsea Clinton's home, you would find that it was quite high, certainly in the level to severe extreme concern per the Building Biology Institute guidelines that I mentioned before. So, you know, I've talked to people. I spoke to a woman who was electrosensitive who had come to realize this. Her parents had put in, you know, Wi-Fi everything in their house, and she couldn't live in her parents' house anymore because she was getting headaches from it. And I think the parents were defensive at first because they had just invested all this money in this so-called smart home when it's really a dumb home. So it's already here. It's all of these devices. And, of course, you know, as a side note, which goes beyond the health impact, or, you know, you could argue it creates psychological health impacts, there's a opportunity for warrantless wiretapping and privacy issues with all of these devices. Somebody can hack into your home Wi-Fi system sitting in a cafe in a foreign country. And certainly the police, as you can see with the Amazon, are trying to get a hold of, you know, any information that's recorded by all of these devices in your house. So, you know, it's really has accelerated all these, yes, all these tech CEOs are pushing it. You have Mark Zuckerberg pushing wireless drones. He wants to have more wireless transmitters so that Facebook Live can work, you know, around every corner in every city. And, you know, they're not alone. You know, they're not alone. They're all kind of pushing this and they're all doing it. And it's not headed in a good direction. But this is, you know, a case of it's a very extreme situation where you have these tech CEOs pushing something that's already, you know, known to be unsafe. I don't know whether the information hasn't reached them or it's been stovepiped in such a manner that they think it's only a few people that are reacting to it and that it's not a really severe public health problem, which it is. And so, yes, this is part of the problem. You know, one of the bills, and, you know, when you heard me on the radio talking on WBAI, there were two bills in Congress. One of them is S-19, the Mobile Act Now bill, which would put cell towers every 100 to 200 feet in residential areas to run. You know, we're talking about having the Wi-Fi in vehicles. It would power the vehicle-to-vehicle communications as well as consumer.
Wait. Let me hear if I got this right. Cell phone towers every 100 to 200 feet in residential neighborhoods?
In cities, yes. Yes, and it would, yes, because these 5G networks use a higher frequency, which has a shorter wavelength, and so the nature of them is that they would have to have more transmitters in closer. So if you started with the idea that the cell tower should be 1,500 feet away, and now you've moved them in closer, you've moved the Wi-Fi indoors, you have the smart meter on top of the house, you have these consumer devices in the house, then you're going to have these high-powered transmitters on utility poles where, at least in your own house, you can control things. Here they're going to take effectively gut local control, home rule, over zoning and planning decisions with this. That's why this bill is so serious, the S-19 in the Senate, which, you know, I was urging people on Gary Null's show, I urge your constituency as well to oppose. And the other bill, S-88, the Digit Bill, is the companion bill, which really speaks to these devices that you're talking about. It's called the Internet of Things, so that all the devices in your house are connected, Wi-Fi enabled. And Cory Booker is one of the co-sponsors of it. And you go to his office and you try talking to him about this, and they absolutely, it's like talking to science denialists. It's like being, you know, if you're with Galileo trying to say that the sun does not revolve around the earth and the church saying, yes, it does, that's where we are with microwave radiation, and that's where these people in Congress are. And it should be quite embarrassing to them, but unfortunately it's not because they're living in a little bubble when you have people in Parliament in the UK and Canada speaking out about this and saying what a problem it is, and that you have the EU saying we have to have white zones for people. Instead of white zones, we're making the zones that we have even more crowded with electrosmog. So people really, and this is why I urge people again to buy a radio frequency meter, because you can see if the meter is quiet, you're in effectively a white zone, a quiet space in your house, and that's what you should be sleeping in, that's what you should be working in, that's what you should be living in. But all of this advertising has convinced people that they have to have all these gadgets and be, you know, sitting in this cloud of electrosmog all day, which, by the way, is making a percentage of the population extremely ill, that can't tolerate it, that need to get accommodation under the Americans with Disabilities Act or the Fair Housing Act, right, to get this radiation away from their house and either telecommute to work or get it shut off at work or whatever they can do. And so this is where we're at. And this population is really somewhat, you know, it's almost like being gay in 1980 where you don't tell anybody this, but it is actually really going on. And the cities of Boston and Philadelphia wrote to the FCC in 2013 and said the more you roll out these transmitters, like this bill I just mentioned where you would have a cell tower every 100 to 200 feet, the more you're creating a problem for these people who already can't go places or need to have transmitters shut off to go places. And then it affects everything, accessing a library, accessing a school, accessing a hospital even, because the hospitals have all gone Wi-Fi'd. You know, there were doctors, I'll give you an example, Columbia Presbyterian did speak up and say we shouldn't Wi-Fi the hospital, and management ran roughshod right over the doctors, so, and the doctors let it happen. So the medical advice was being overruled by management because they wanted everything to be connected on a Wi-Fi network, never mind the fact that there's people whose heart rate goes crazy, you get pounding headaches, muscle pain, blood pressure spikes up in the presence of these systems that they're forcing into hospitals. And there's a good case study that's on page 113 of a book called Electronic Silent Spring, which talks about somebody who was sensitive to this radiation who was in the hospital for, had some kind of flu or infectious disease or something to that effect. And the Wi-Fi system in the hospital was jacking up the heart rate and the blood pressure. And so she was able to negotiate with the doctor to get the wireless heart rate monitor off of her because that was jacking up, you know, her vitals because what it does is it jacks up the autonomic nervous system. But the hospital had a policy that if you were taking drugs intravenously, that you had to wear this wireless heart rate monitor. So she was able to take them orally, but if she hadn't, there would have been a conflict between what was good for her health and the hospital policy. So this is where we've totally lost our minds, creating serious legal problems, serious health problems, serious public health problems, and something, you know, people need to take matters into their own hands. They need to hardwire things in their house the way we all used to live 10 years ago, 5 years ago in some cases. And some of the things we're talking about, like the Amazon Echo, I think weren't really even in existence 2 or 3 years ago or ubiquitous in any event. So keep things hardwired. You can have an IT person come in and have jacks in multiple areas of the room. If you want to have an iPad, you can hardwire the iPad with a retrofit and plug it in with an Ethernet connection. That is the only safe way to access the Internet. Beaming microwaves to your house or any other environment is not a safe way to access the Internet. It is poor man's broadband. It is lazy man's broadband. It is not safe. And there's plenty of scientific evidence showing that, you know, there's the percentage of people that you use as 3 to 5% who are hypersensitive to this radiation. But if you really start to pull things apart, there's a toxicologist in Canada who says that it's 30% of the population. And I think it's quite plausible. One thing that I've noticed is that you see in doctor's offices and other types of offices that the secretarial staff, the administrative staff, tends to be sitting near the router. And after a while, they start to manifest some symptoms of sensitization. Before one becomes in pain from it, there's a series of other things that happen. It disrupts brainwave patterns, and the first thing to go is sleep. So people have sleep disorders. They feel sometimes a little spacey with kind of like pressure or other sensations in their head before they're actually in agonizing pain from it as the syndrome progresses. So there's a number of people who are somewhere along the route to sensitization that are being misdiagnosed, being given sleep medication, ADHD medication, anti-anxiety medication, when their heart rate, blood pressure, headaches, et cetera, are being driven by the Wi-Fi system that they're sitting in. And that's something we're going to have to come to terms with as a society. But I would submit to people that if you want to wait for the government to tell you, you're waiting too long. Other governments are saying this is going on, trying to legislate to do something about it, even if they're, you know, it really amounts to lip service. But here in this country, the industry has such tremendous power. And I know you told me you had Deborah Davis as one of your guests. And in 2014, after the CDC finally put some guidance about cell phones on their website and, you know, that children absorb more radiation than adults, 10 days later, the guidance was yanked off. Deborah Davis did a Freedom of Information Act request. And what came out was a treasure trove of angry emails from the industry beating up on the CDC for warning the public and doing what other countries are doing. And the CDC folded like a pack of cards. And or a cheap tent, use your whatever analogy you want, and the guidance is gone, and it's unacceptable. And that's why when you go to someone like Cory Booker's office and you say, how can you sponsor this bill, they come back with, well, what does the General Accounting Office say? Well, the General Accounting Office did say there was a problem with cell phones, and they're going through another review. But I said the FCC called for a request for comment on their standards in 2013. 900 comments were made. They did nothing. 2014, Department of the Interior says that their standards are 30 years out of date, not adhesive to reality, do not account for these effects that occur well below the heating threshold at which these so-called guidelines are ostensibly set. So the lights are on, but nobody's home in the government. Booker's office also pointed to this NTP study that came out last May. It was pretty major because the government finally released, after 17 years, this study that had been done on rats with cell phone radiation. And one out of 12 of them showed either precancer or cancer. And Booker's office came back and said, well, the NTP said it's not completely certain, you know, causation hasn't been proven, and they're still waiting for the rest of the results. The results that came out were preliminary results, but those results were preliminary to everything they were studying, and they were final in terms of, you know, definitive in terms of that's what they found. And in fact, the assistant director of the NTP, Booker, got on a teleconference, of which there's a recording on the internet, saying that causation has been proven, right, which is what all these other countries are saying, what the European judiciary already recognizes, that cell phones and cordless phones cause brain tumors. And we're still arguing about this, and Booker will sit here like he's the church talking to Galileo, saying, oh, no, it hasn't been proven, when there's tens of thousands of studies showing that this microwave radiation is a problem. In fact,
I just want to jump in here, because there's a lot that you just shared with us, and I want to just kind of reiterate and break it down so people really understand the profundity of what you are talking about, Deborah. So first of all, people need to understand that the Wi-Fi world that we're living in and accelerating our exposure to is incredibly damaging and harmful to our body. So just like you were saying, this National Toxicology Program study that said conclusively exposure to cell phones for a certain number of 3-4 hours a day total, I think, daily would absolutely create the most dangerous form of malignant tumors in the brain. But people need to understand it's not just about brain tumors, that exposure to this microwave radiation frequency is perceived as a toxin to the body. It is causing free radical damage. It's causing inflammation, which affects our hearts, our fertility. It affects stress levels. It affects sleep, like you were saying, brainwave function, memory, behavior. It can compromise all systems of the body. And even though this is what just amazes me, even though all around the world, it is recognized and acknowledged that this is a dangerous technology that should be limited and kept out of certainly places that were more sensitive to the effects, like schools and hospitals. Our country is one of the only countries that just going full steam ahead because it is such a profitable industry right now. And the industry obviously rules Congress.
Yeah, I think as Winston Churchill said, Americans eventually get things right after exhausting all the other possibilities. And right now we are
doing it wrong. I mean, you know, we laugh about it, but you know, this is a potential. You know, we've talked about this too. I call it the greatest public health disaster that no one knows about, and we are all being exposed. But we're all lab rats. We're being exposed at degrees and intensities and concentrations that have never existed before in the history of humanity.
Right, and I think it's good that you put it the way you did for your listeners, because really the cell phone and brain tumor, two comps of it. Nobody should be doubting at this point that cell phones cause brain tumors. Obviously, they don't cause them in every person, but with enough use, you know, it depends on your susceptibility. There's certainly enough of a risk that you should never be holding a cell phone to your head. You should use it on speakerphone, and you should use it sparingly. As a side note, the Vienna Medical Association came out in November 2015 and said, do not, you should use wired technologies indoors. You should limit your use of the phone. And here's a good tip for your listeners. Do not load your phone up with apps, because the apps, and you can see this with a meter, turn the smartphone into a de facto little cell tower in your pocket. And it's not just intermittently emitting radiation as to when you would be using on a cell phone call, but boosting high levels of radiation as the apps are continuously updating. So this whole lifestyle thing that is being promoted, like the companies you mentioned, like Amazon, with the devices, it's all wrong, and it shouldn't be happening. You should be accessing data or information on your home computer on a hardwired connection. If you're doing shopping or whatnot, You should not be using apps on a smartphone. This is anathema to people. If you have a dumb, quote-unquote, dumb old flip phone, right, they emit orders of magnitude less radiation. They're only communicating with the tower once every 5 minutes or so to let it know where it is, and they're not emitting a steady stream of radiation. The new smartphones boost the radiation up higher, and it's exponentially higher when you have these apps on. So that's the first thing that people can do if you
want
to do something for your family.
So that's new information for me. So you're saying do not load apps, take out anything that's not absolutely necessary, or what do you recommend?
I'm saying get rid of them completely if possible, and if you have to have a few, just two or three, leave it at that. The person who first told me about that was in 2013 was Leonard Hardell, who's the world's expert on wireless devices, and whose work was the basis for the Group 2B carcinogenicity determination by the World Health Organization. And then I eventually measured one and could see, and you could see with the smartphones loaded up with apps, that it was blowing out the meter. The meter was going absolutely nuts, the light lighting up, and if you have one that converts the microwaves into sound, it's just very noisy, right? And so, you know, this is a new concept for people. And then in November 2015, the Vienna Medical Association said, do not load up your phone with apps. Get rid of them. And so that is a huge source of radiation, and it's right on your purse, and people are putting it in their pocket. I saw when I was telling someone about this, it was someone who had a limp and kept the phone in the side of their body that had the limp, and I said, let me measure the apps on your phone. And he was one of the ones who loaded up, must have had, you know, more, I can't even count, right? The whole thing was loaded up like, you know, like a runway with apps. But, you know, so it raises the question that I had and this is where a lot of this becomes sort of anecdotal, talking to doctors, talking to people in general. I spoke to somebody else who is active on this issue and on the West Coast and said that their lawyer had a limp, was getting a hip replacement, and was holding the phone in the same side of the body as where the problem manifested on the hip. Now, that doesn't prove anything, but certainly, given the amount of radiation, given everything you just talked about a few minutes ago, that this causes inflammation, that it breaks DNA, that it is neurotoxic, having that such an extensive level of radiation in your pocket is doesn't make a lot of sense. I was measuring people in a talk, and I was measuring the auditorium, right, because with everyone with their smartphones on, the levels were very high. When I went out into the hallway, the meter dropped off. It was very quiet, and I was walking around this area where the talk was. And then when the janitorial staff would walk near me, the meter would go off again, right, because they had stuff on their phones. And then there was a man holding his child's hand, young child, and his phone was loaded up with apps. The meter went absolutely crazy when he walked by me, and then when he would go further away, the meter would drop off. And it made me think back again to this movie Full Signal, which, you know, was done in 2009 when the phones were not nearly as powerful. There weren't, you know, apps galore, and they were, you know, more people had sort of flip phones. And they talked about how if a father was holding like a child's hand and was on his cell phone, that it would change the brainwaves, the EEG of the child, while he was on the phone. And so those were the less powerful phones. Now we have parents walking around with these higher powerful phones. They have no idea the radiation coming out of them and what they're exposing their kids to in their midst. By the way, you should not use a phone inside a car unless you have it so that you have an aftermarket solution where the antenna is on the outside of the car, because you don't want to have the radiation in any kind of metal box, the car being a metal box, a train being a metal box, and an elevator.
And an airplane.
And an airplane, in fact, as well. The Belgian Medical Association said not to use cell phone on trains or public transportation, and you can see it, right, because the radiation bounces off the metal skin and then back at you. So it's like a reverse Faraday cage, like a Faraday cage in physics, supposed to protect you from the radiation, a metal encasing. But if you have the radiation source inside the metal, that's where you're creating a problem. And, yes, the thing with planes, you know, Steven Sinatra, the integrative cardiologist,
yes,
he has two
yes.
organizations. One is Doctors for Safer Schools and Doctors for Safer Skies. The Wi-Fi in planes is very serious, as are the use of phones. Right now, I think the only airline that flies across the ocean that bans them is El Al, and I'm sure that's for security reasons. But the budget airlines in Europe do not have Wi-Fi on them. And it made me think, you know, after that Germanwings crash, where they were obviously they had created a problem post 9/11 with these reinforced cockpit doors, because of course if the cockpit, the terrorist is the pilot, right, he can lock everyone out of the cockpit and then drive the plane into the ground, which is what happened in that case. So it made me think, all right, they tried to come up with a solution to a problem, people driving planes into buildings in New York in 2001 in Washington, and created another problem. And it looks, when I was looking at the commentary on that, it looks like they want to create another problem. They said, well, we should have a Wi-Fi-enabled camera in the cockpit so we can watch the pilot at all times. So great, you want to put a Wi-Fi transmitter near the pilot's head. I personally know of three pilots that had to retire solely because of the use of the Wi-Fi in the aircraft, that they couldn't tolerate it. For a while, they could tolerate it just because the reinforced door actually kept them away from the radiation. But if you're going to put the Wi-Fi in the cockpit, you're going to create more of a problem, even for the people who aren't hypersensitive to it, you know, having cognitive problems, affecting heart rate, affecting judgment, affecting brainwave pattern. And the reason in particular why these pilots had to retire was as the Wi-Fi then got put in every single hotel, they couldn't stay in a hotel and then fly the plane the next day, and went on early retirement even though, but for right the Wi-Fi, they could be functioning perfectly fine. And that's part of what's going on here and part of what's getting swept under the rug.
So that's why it's so dangerous, and that's why we have to alert people, because it's invisible. This radiation emitted from all of these devices, cell phone towers, you can't see it, smell it, feel it, hear it, taste it, unless you're that population, which you said could be up as much as 30% of the population that has an electrosensitivity to these frequencies. But most people, it's like a stealth bacteria. You don't even know it is present, wreaking havoc on your health. You look at for all the other causes, but the real cause isn't being acknowledged because it's invisible unless you get this knowledge.
Right, and part of what's insidious, like obviously the people who are hypersensitive, who are in intense pain around Wi-Fi, right, and have to keep a wide berth from Wi-Fi transmitters, from cell transmitters, and certainly not use a smartphone or what have you. Then I think the people, if you look at that, it's a sliding scale of dysfunction, right? There's already, the American Academy of Environmental Medicine says that if you have a rheumatological condition or almost any medical condition, really it can be exacerbated by exposure to this radiation. And so if you're sitting in it all the time and you don't know where it is and where it isn't, you're certainly not going to be able to consciously avoid it to then see if your fibromyalgia or what have you clears up or whatever rheumatological problem you have. And certainly there are people reacting in these heart rate studies that don't self-describe as hypersensitive, but when you put them under blinded conditions by a cordless phone base station or a Wi-Fi router, their heart rate goes crazy, which, you know, I was looking in a doctor's office once, and he was taking measurements of heart rate and blood pressure right under the Wi-Fi transmitter, so I tried to explain to him why this could be throwing off the reading.
What meter do you recommend to test the microwave radiation coming out of these devices?
I think the best one is the Acoustimeter. You can get one at Magnetic Sciences. That's the cheapest one that I've seen on the Internet. Do not have a financial relationship with them, so I just want to preface my comments with that.
Just to be clear
to your listeners. But I do know Alistair Phillips, who's the engineer in the UK who designed the Acoustimeter. And I think what's great about the Acoustimeter, it has this, you know, you can push this button to get the sound effects from it, which I think is very effective when you're trying to show people how, electrically noisy the environment is when the stuff is on. You can flip, I've gone to people's offices or whatnot, you flip off the Wi-Fi, you flip off the cordless phone, all of a sudden the meter's quiet, and then they can see, seeing is believing, right? And it has two sets of lights. It has lights for peak reading, and it seems that the peak reading may be the aspect that it creates the most biological effects, and then you can also see the average reading to the right. It has a readout on top, and it has lights. It has green for less bad, orange for bad, and red for horrific. So you can use that as a guide if you don't want to sit there and calculate and remember which number corresponds to which health level. But I think what people who are electrohypersensitive have found is that very much, you know, clearly if there's no lights on, it's a safe environment, but some of the lower green numbers can be tolerable. So it really does correspond to what's going on in people's subjective experience as well as what the literature is showing us. But I think, you know, again, seeing is believing. You can also buy one from Less EMF. I think theirs is more expensive, or look for one on Amazon. So there's different places to buy one, but the Acoustimeter is, I think, the best one in terms of performance and in terms of being able to see the peak reading and the way that it's displaying the information.
Okay. It's just good for people to know if they want to start measuring. So to, to kind of recap everything we're saying as we're kind of coming to the end, it's a big conversation. It's a huge issue. We're going into the 5G world, which is going to expand the bandwidth, which means we'll have, electrosmog is like being in Beijing. If you could see what it's like with all these devices and all these Wi-Fi routers and, you know, the many things that are now connected, if you could visualize it, it would be like what it is in a day in Beijing, where you cannot see, your hand in front of your face. That's what the pollution would look like if we could visualize it. Wouldn't you agree?
I think that's an excellent analogy, Cheryl.
Yeah.
And
go ahead.
Sorry. Oh, no, I was just going to say, and again, just bringing back the concept we were discussing earlier, that the radiation is really more a factor of how close you are to the transmitter. So it's doesn't really register with people's minds all the time, but some of these wireless wearables have tremendous amounts. We talked about having a cell phone loaded up with apps. The expensive model of Fitbit is constantly beaming out radiation as if you have a cell tower on your wrist, right? And it's beaming either into your liver or your pancreas, depending on which side you have it in. The Apple Watch has both a Wi-Fi and a Bluetooth connection. It can be shut off, however, when not in use. And then you have Tile app, which I think is particularly bad. They're those little tiles that you stick on your keys or your kid's backpack or your dog's collar if you lose track of them, so you can track them with your cell phone. Huge amounts of radiation within 10, 15 feet even, especially within 5 feet, huge amounts. And so having any of these transmitters on your body is just a loony idea.
And people wear them 24/7.
Yeah. That they do, and they think, with the Fitbit, they say, well, they're selling it. President Obama wears it; it must be safe. And that's how people's minds work, and that's the wrong thinking. You shouldn't have any of these transmitters on your body. You shouldn't have any transmitters that can't be shut off, like a Tile app. You shouldn't have a Time Warner intelligent home, right? Because you're constantly beaming radiation, monitoring things, Honeywell's Nest, et cetera. That was one of the things found in that murder investigation in the house as well that I forgot about. So all of these things, and right, they're just getting more and more. There's bracelets with them. There's even wireless things that people wear on their bras to remind them, to do their monthly breast exam. I mean, it's crazy. It's crazy.
I'll tell you what I found. I found a device, a wireless device, that's like a wireless tampon.
Yes.
Have you seen that?
Yes.
It actually is a tampon, and it's wireless. Think about it. Think about it, folks. You're sitting there monitoring what's going on and the level of bleeding that's happening when you have your period with this thing inside you that's wireless, giving and receiving microwave radiation.
It's a lack. I saw one as well that actually would measure lactation for pregnant women. And there was actually wireless donkey rides in the Galilee in Israel where they had a transmitter on the donkey so you could then transmit pictures back home. I mean, there's a lack of common sense going on. And the donkey actually reminded me at, South by Southwest, they were hiring homeless people, putting wireless transmitters around their necks so they would walk around and mill on the crowd, get paid to be a walking Wi-Fi hotspot. That's a huge human rights violation, civil rights violation. There's no thinking going on.
Is that a real thing? Did that really happen?
It really happened. I have a picture on my website blog of.
You mean that at the music festival, South by Southwest?
It's sort of, isn't it like a quasi-tech, quasi-music? Sort of a mix
I don't know. Anyway, but they actually did that. Oh, my God.
They actually did it. It was reported in the news. But what we have, it's almost like Revenge of the Nerds. We have these tech nerds putting all these things out. You know, there's like even a wireless authentication vitamin. You swallow it, it emits RF from your body, and then you can trigger some alarm so it will let you into your office and some hi-fi offices. I mean, It was designed by DARPA, the Defense Research Projects Agency. It's nuts what's going on, and people have to demand that their workplace, you know, there's other workplaces where they, you know, are having people wear things so they can see how productive they are, measuring their vitals while they're working to see if they're stressed or not, which, of course, I can imagine makes people more stressed that they're being monitored. People have to put their foot down and say that this isn't acceptable. No to these consumer devices, no to the wireless smart meter on their house, no on Wi-Fi, and they need to stand up for their kids and say no Wi-Fi in schools as well, which is increasingly happening in a few jurisdictions.
I know here in Tulsa, Oklahoma, where I live, that you know, there are so many schools are smart schools, which means the whiteboard, you know, is wireless. There's wireless connections. Everyone's computers are there. They have many, many routers and classrooms. Is there any organization, is there any place people can go who want to start advocating to withdraw these, you know, like smart schools, getting schools safe again? Where do people go to get the knowledge or find support systems?
Well, grassroots environmental education has a few initiatives going on to get it out of some schools in Long Island and New York. And they do have a wireless radiation program where they add that to their list of toxins that they tell people to reduce, you know, other toxins that people are, you know, more well aware of, cleaning fluids, diesel exhaust in schools, artificial turf, that kind of thing. But, you know, a lot of these people are independent. There's a website, wifiinschools.com or .org. There's wifiinschools.co.uk that have good literature about this, information about it. Like I said, in Argentina, they have the bill to get rid of it. Steven Sinatra has his organization's Doctors for Safer Schools, but there's not enough of a concerted sort of joint effort on this. There's a group in Petaluma that's been working on this. There's individual people that have taken their kids out of school. There's a lawsuit going on in Massachusetts for a kid who got forced out of his school when they put in industrial-strength Wi-Fi, and he became sensitized to it and was basically forced to leave his school. So this is going on all over the place. Canada, they're fighting it a little more, but you have to sort of get the literature, present it in an organized fashion to the school. I hate to say this, but it's a bit like Sisyphus pushing the rock up the hill at this juncture when you had President Obama partnering with the FCC. They had $2 billion was sent by the FCC for the infrastructure. Microsoft et al. And Apple were partnering to get in the iPads and the wireless devices into the schools. So it's really going in the wrong direction. But if I were a parent with a child, I would not send any child to school in a Wi-Fi environment, even for a day. That's how serious this is. Well, and parents are going to have to answer to their children when they have early onset cancer or neurological problems, or they're not quite as bright as they were alert when they were younger, because this does affect sleep. It does affect brain waves. It does affect cognitive processing ability. You have, or, you know, at least one recent study of rats showing that it affects a protein that would cause early onset Alzheimer's. You have a Finnish school official saying that we're going to have an epidemic of brain damage from Wi-Fi in schools. So parents really need to, what I hear from them a lot is they say, well, what can we do? This is the way they have it. It's everywhere. What are you going to do? Just live out in the woods? That's the wrong reaction to something that's already so extreme. You know, imagine if people tried fighting Nazis with that attitude, right? The Nazi resistance said, oh, why bother? Because, you know, they're in control of everything. So I hate to make that analogy, but that's, you know, this is very serious, right? If you want your kid to be functional into middle age and not develop electrohypersensitivity potentially and be able to function properly without the homeostasis of their body being interrupted, you really got to open your mouth and say something and learn about this. So
Deborah, we can go on talking about this, and I can tell how much you're passionate about it, but we've come to the end of the show. But before we end the show, I want people to know about your website. So people should go to corporateinterference.org, which is Deborah's website, Capold's website. And if you want to contact her, go to info@corporateinterference.org to learn. Definitely go to the website, corporateinterference.org, to learn more. We just have 10 seconds. Deborah, anything you just want to complete with?
Yeah, I would say, you know, first thing, if you can call your senators and tell them no on S-19, the Mobile Act Now bill, and no on S-88, the Digit bill. Do it as soon as possible. Call as many senators as possible because this is...
That's S-19 and S-88.
Yes.
Bills, Senate bills. Well, thank you for, thank you for everything you're doing, Deborah. Thank you for sharing this information, for helping us to awaken to what's happening to this wireless world we have unknowingly stumbled into and now takes hold of us, and to inspiring us to take action. I just really appreciate the great work you're doing, and thank you for being on the show today.
Likewise, thank you for having me.
And thank you all for listening. We've been having this amazing conversation, an alarming conversation with Deborah Kopalt, and check her out, corporateinterference.org. And until next time, remember to always honor the wisdom of your feminine self. Bye for now.